Shalom, I hope everything is well. So, God willing, today we're going to be discussing Hamotivatzia L'Chazor B'Tshuva, the motivation, or really a motivation, to be Chozer B'Tshuva, to do Tshuva according to Rav Kook. So, last week we discussed Tshuva's HaGuf, Tshuva of the body, and it's something that was, I guess, was very practical, down to earth a little bit, and also very individualistic. Everybody has their own Tshuva's HaGuf to do, even though we saw that it has national and, I guess, more global applications. But today we're going to be looking at a topic that for Rav Kook is, on the one hand, very personal. It's your personal motivation to do tshuva, but it really touches on some very broad cosmic themes and some of the really, according to Rav Kook himself, some of the most foundational elements of Rav Kook's thought. But before we get to Rav Kook, just like we did last week, let's start off with a little bit of earlier Jewish Svarim, earlier Svarim on tshuva. About this topic, and we'll see where Rav Kook's chiddush lies. So, what is the motivation to do tshuva in earlier Jewish thought? So, there are of course many motivations to do tshuva, many things that could drive a person to do tshuva in earlier Jewish thought. But there's one theme that I think is fairly dominant. So, let's look at it in Shaar Tshuva, Shaar Aleph, Ikaria Tshuva Oz Yud. So, Rabbeinu Yonah writes as follows: Acharata. One of the Ikaria Tshuva is Acharata, is regret. Yavin Levavo, source number one. A person should understand, Ki ra umar azvavas Hashem. It's bad, it's evil, and it's bitter when somebody abandons Hashem. V'yashav libo, ki ish onesh v'nakam v'shilei malavo. There's going to be an onesh, and it's going to be almost like vengeance from Hashem. Kenyan shenemar li nakam v'shilei. Which, according to one day in the Midrash, is really about the Oyvim, about the non-Jewish enemies of the Jewish people, but Rabbeinu Yonah has it about a Jewish person who does chatayim. The Iskarit al Maasavarayim, a person has to do Charetta. V'yomer Babavo, Malasisi, what did I do? Eich lo ya pachad ul-kim neged'ini. How could it be, neged'inai, how could it be that I didn't fear Hashem? Lo ya gurti mitochokos alavonu min ha-meshpatim ha-ra'im. I wasn't scared from all the tochacha that I heard about the seriousness of Avonos. Ki rabim ha-kovim le-rasha, was there many pains of the Rasha? Lo chamalti ya-gufi, lo chasa einai olav mishchaso mipnei ha-naz regen achad. I didn't take compassion on my body. I am destroying it for the fleeting hana'a of one moment. So this is a piece that expresses charata, but it's also a way. And then he goes. The Rabbeinu Yonah goes on to say that not only did I not take compassion on my body, I didn't take compassion on my soul, my neshama either. And this is a passage about charata, which is part of tshuva, but it's really also a motivating factor to do tshuva, as Rabbeinu Yonah explains. Because if you think along these lines, if you think about how badly one acted, how much one failed oneself, how much one failed Hashem, that is going to be a motivating factor to do tshuva, to fix one's chatayim. So here, the motivating factor to tshuva is a deep, deep feeling of failure, a deep, deep feeling of sin. How could it be that I've done so much bad, and I have to try to climb out of this? These are feelings that almost break a person. These are what you might describe colloquially as negative feelings. But these are motivating factors for a person to do tshuva and to fix their ways. In a similar sense, you get a similar impression from the Rambam. Rambam in source number two, Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Beis. Rambam writes, "Midarkei tshuva dios hashav solik tamid lifnei Hashem bevelkiv tachanunim." Midarkei tshuva is a person. It's a person who's doing tshuva to constantly cry out before Hashem with tears, with crying and pleading. Tzedakah, etc., etc. Skip down to the last line. The gola mimakomo. Part of the Darkei Atshuva is the going to Galus. So you look in the Gemara Rashan, I think, it sounds like just Galus is Mechaper. The Rambam adds on a little bit of a psychological explanation. Shegalus Mechaper as Avon. Galus atones for sin. Why? Because it causes a person to be submissive, to be, it breaks a person. Makes a person to somebody who's humble, somebody who's of low spirit. And that is a prerequisite to do tshuva, being in this mindset of lihikana, lios anav, ushval ruach. Presumably, it's similar to Rabbeinu Yonah in this sense that once you realize the failures and the bad things that a person did, that is going to motivate them to try to fix and move away from those negative elements. For this background, and it's just like the contrast is very stark. Rav Kook has pieces where he describes the pain of chatayim and the pain of somebody who's doing tshuva and how to use this as a motivating factor to do tshuva. But throughout the tshuva, there's another theme as well. flip at source number three, we'll just say the theme, and then we'll try to explain the background. Rav Kook writes, source number three, Orot HaTshuva Dalad Dalad, the nature of the world and of every individual creature, every individual person. Ha'Historia HaEnushit, Ish Yechidi, human history and each individual person and his actions, they have to be looked at with one glance. Like one content, like one book with different chapters. The And then the light of one's knowledge, the light of wisdom that leads to our tshuva will quickly come. So if you just read this piece by itself, it sounds pretty astounding. It even sounds pretty strange. It sounds like if a person thinks of all human history and thinks of themselves as connected to it, so that will lead you to Teshuvah. So if I read about the Napoleonic Wars, and I read about World War I, and I read about the 30 Years of War, and I read about Chinese history, and I think of myself as, you know, as the, not the culmination, but the next stage in human history, that is going to lead towards Teshuvah. So the question is like, my high, what do we make of this? How could learning history and thinking of yourself as part of history, how could that motivate a person to do tshuva? And the explanation, if you look in the Pirushim of Shlomo Aviner and other Pirushim in Orot HaTshuva, the answer is that Rav Kook explains elsewhere in Orot HaTshuva and elsewhere throughout his writings that this the background for this is really a major fundamental foundational theme in Rav Kook's thought. I didn't put it on the source sheet, but the Rav David HaKohen, the Rav Nazir, was one of the major students and editors of Rav Kook's writings. So the Nazir records that in his diaries, that one time he had a conversation with Rav Kook about the following topic. Does Rav Kook have a systematic philosophy? Meaning, are there general principles and derivatives and details that flow from these principles? Because Rav Kook used to often write things down in his notebooks. He had these carried around his notebooks. He would have a flash of inspiration. He would write something down. And you look at his notebooks, which are published under Shmona Kvatzim, or some of them are published, there's often no connection between the pieces. So the Nazir and Rav Kook were discussing this. Is there a system to Rav Kook's philosophy, or just like these random flashes of inspiration? Rav Kook told the Nazir that he does have a system of thought. It is an organized philosophy. He just finds it very hard to organize his own thoughts. So the Nazir, who at one point in his life was a PhD student in Western philosophy in university, before he met Rav Kook and became a mekubal. So he said, no, I maybe he's good at organizing things. So the Nazir suggested to Rav Kook, why don't you give me your notebooks and I'll organize it along the into different chapters around certain basic principles, so it'll be clear to the reader what the principles of your thought are. So Rav Kook thought that was a great idea, and that's how Orot HaKodesh came about. Rav Kook gave the Nazir his diaries, and the Nazir organized the pieces around certain themes. But the Nazir writes that in that conversation, Rav Kook told them certain basic principles in his thought, certain foundations, certain chidushim almost. And it was these things, at least in chidushim and these in their specific iterations, it was these themes that Rav Kook told Nazir to organize Orot HaKodesh around. So one of the themes is the ascent of the world, hita'alut ha'olam, development. That if you go through traditional religious literature in general, and also Jewish literature, you might get the impression that things are on a downward down are on a downward spiral. That we have a concept of Yerida Sadoros, that the descent of the generations. So we always look back to the Avos, to Moshe Rabbeinu, to earlier generations as our models, and we say that it's hard for us to reach those levels. And the concept of Yerida Sadoros is in the Gemara. It's in Chazal. May not be in the Rambam, but it seems to be a very, very basic and central theme that as we get farther from creation, as we get farther from Sinai, we are actually on a lower spiritual level. Rav Kook, though, again, we don't have the time to get into the background. Rav Kook thought that this might be true from certain perspective, at least on the level of individuals, but on the level of the world as a whole, in terms of creation as a whole, in terms of human society and civilization, the opposite is happening. We are actually constantly getting better. And that God created the world at a certain point. Let's call that point X. And he put the world on a one-way trajectory to reach the ultimate state of perfection, which is point Y. And there are many, many stages along the way. And there are many, many, and there, and I think it could take a long time. And development and progress could be very, very slow. But the world is on a one-way trajectory. Believe it or not, see it or not, like it or not, towards the ultimate state of perfection. So let's see Rav Kook describe this in a Rota Kodesh. So Rav Kook writes as follows in source number four. Torah Hetzpatzkot, which means the doctrine of evolution. So Charles Darwin wrote his book, The Origin of Species, in the 1860s. Rav Kook was born in 1865. So the concept of evolution, biological evolution, and social Darwinism was on the rise. So the average religious thinker, Jewish and Christian, was very reticent to accept the doctrine of evolution because it seems to contradict the stories in Sefer Bereishis. So Rav Kook has letters where he discusses the contradiction between evolution and Sheshes Mei Bereishis. But over here, he's talking on a broader level. He writes as follows: Torah Hetzpatzkot, this concept of evolution, that is currently conquering the world, it fits. It jives with the secrets of the world of Kabbalah, more than any other philosophical doctrine. Evolution fits, jives with, connects to the secrets of Kabbalah, the Rav Kook's understanding of the Zohar. Hayitz next paragraph, evolution, development, that goes an upward path, an upward spiral. It provides the world with an optimistic foundation. How could you ever give up hope? That everything is constantly getting better. When you pierce the inner essence of this concept of development, of this progress in the world, we find Hashem, divine matter, shining with complete clarity. Development, evolution, positive evolution is something that sheds light on Hashem's pathways in this world. So for Rav Kook, the concept of a biological evolution, that organisms are getting more advanced and more adapted to their environments as time goes on, is a physical material manifestation of this basic spiritual principle, that God created the world within one way upward trajectory. And for Rav Kook, as we're going to see, this is not just in a spiritual sense. This is also true in a human civilization sense. So back nowadays, we have public school education, with at least in the Western world, than ever happened. What was the literacy rate 10,000 years, 1,000 years ago? Nowadays, we in the Western world, we think slavery is wrong, and we move away from slavery. What was the situation like for the vast majority of slaves or serfs 1,000 years ago? Nowadays, let's say in America, there's a debate about public health care. Where is there such a concept of society that we should care enough about the members of society that we should feel some sort of obligation to at least debate whether or not we should take care of people's medical needs? The world is getting better from a moral perspective. The world is getting better from a technological perspective. The world is getting better. The world is improving from the state of knowledge. I mean, the average high schooler today knows more about science, knows more truths about science than Aristotle. Does that mean they're smarter than Aristotle? Presumably not. But with the aggregate amassment of human knowledge, we start off on a higher level than earlier generations. So if Cook argues the same thing is true regarding spirituality, regarding religion, regarding our connection to Hashem. I might be on a lower level than the Rashba. I am certainly on a lower level than the Rashba. I have less kavana during tefillah. I learn Torah, but I feel less devikus to Hashem when I learn Torah. But on a generational level, on a Am Yisrael level as a whole, and on a global level, we are starting off at a higher place, one step closer to Mashiach. And Rav Kook writes, now for those people that want to go into it, Rav Kook has pieces called Shleimut v'Hishtalmut, completion and becoming more perfect, perfection and becoming more perfect, where Rav Kook describes why Hashem almost needed, why Hashem wanted to create the world in this way, but we're not going to get into it now. So Rav Kook writes that if you want to know what the true meaning of tshuva is in Chazal and in Kabbalistic literature, it is this process of constant upward ascent. Rav Kook writes as follows in Rota Tshuva, source number five. The world must reach a full state of tshuva. The world doesn't, it's not stationary, it's not static, it doesn't stay in one place. It is constantly developing. And the true and complete development has to bring together with it complete health, both material and spiritual, as we saw last week. That is going to bring the light. That is going to bring the light of tshuva with it. Rav Kook here, he doesn't always quote the Gemaras, but in one or a couple of places he quotes the Gemaras and or the tshuva. He's coming from the Gemaras that say tshuva kadmaliyoga, that tshuva precedes the world. What does it mean? Tshuva precedes the world. I always thought tshuva was a reaction to chet. First you do a chet, and the tshuva is a way of fixing it. So I think the Maharsha says that tshuva precedes the world because Hashem knew people were frail and people would end up doing chatayim. So in order for the world to have a basis to stand on, there had to be an option, a possibility for tshuva. Rav Kook says no. Tshuva in its original sense really means this process through which the world is constantly becoming more and more perfect until we reach the ultimate state of reality at some point after Mashiach comes. That is the ultimate state of tshuva. That is the process of tshuva of the world. So the question is, what about tshuva of the yachid? If I tie my right shoe before my left shoe, if I make a belief in davening, if I do lashon hara, so where does that tshuva, the tshuva, and the tshuva of the Rambam, tshuva of halacha, where does that fit in to this cosmic process? So Rav Kook writes as follows in source number 6. Hatshuva ha-klalit, general tshuva, shehi iluy ha-olam v'tikuno, which is the ascent of the world, hatshuva ha-pratit, and the individual tshuva, hanugas le-ishiyut ha-pratit shekol echad v'echad, that touches upon the individual personality of each person, hin b'yachad tochen echad, they're all the same content. The chin kol osam tikuni ha-tarbos, and also those the fixings of civilization, of culture, that through them the world leaves a state of destruction. We don't have gladiators anymore like the Romans had. We moved away from a lot of the barbarism of earlier years. And also the advancements in social and economic life. That are constantly getting better, together with fixing each of the individual chait of each person, both severe chataim and not such severe, less severe chataim, kulam osim chativ achas, they're all one unit, and it cannot be separated. The kul lachad atar slikin, you're all going up to the same, to this, all going up to the same place. Rav Kook is describing that if you want to motivate yourself to do tshuva, and if you firmly believe in this concept of hitalut ha'olam, of the ascent of the world, which we're not doing full justice to over here, so then this is going to be a motivating factor for you to do tshuva. You think about yourself, a person thinking that you, a person thinks about themselves. They did not daven kavanah. They woke up early for davening. They tied their right shoe before their left shoe. So if you think about this concept of the ascent of the world, the entire world is moving in a certain direction. The entire world, for all of human history, was constantly working on itself, consciously or non-consciously, in terms of its inner essence, to come closer to Hashem and reconnect to Hashem. And each individual person, was created, programmed by Hashem with a certain teva to be part of this cosmic dance, to be part of this cosmic process. And what happens when a person does a chait? They step back. They walk away from this cosmic process. The entire world is moving in a certain direction, is moving upwards, is being mitzpateach, is being mitzaveh, and this individual person is all of a sudden not only not helping the situation, but hurting the situation, moving backwards, so to speak, moving out of their connection to the rest of the world. And when you think about this, and you think about the development of history, when you read history and you read about the history of morality and history of technology, history of civilization, history of spirituality, and history of the Chachamim, Chazal, and history of Am Yisrael, and you think about how far we've come from the old times and how close we are to the Moshe Mashiach, now that we're back in Eretz Yisrael, and Am Yisrael is back in Eretz Yisrael, that is going to motivate a person to want to be part of the process. It's going to motivate a person to want to jump back on the bandwagon and be mitzaleh, and be in a state of constant ascent towards perfection together with the rest of the world. And for Rav Kook, this should be a major motivating factor to tshuva as we get closer to Mashiach, particularly in our time period, as we'll see. We want to see this inside again, source number 7, about the tshuva parak of. Rav Kook writes, Mima'amakim ba'a tshuva. Tshuva comes from the depths. Mi'umek gadol zeh, from such a deep place, that the individual soul is no longer a totally independent, autonomous entity. The individual soul is a continuation of the great of the greatness of the great creation as a whole. The desire, the will to do tshuva, each individual person's teshuva touches upon, is a shadow of, is a reflection of this general ratzon of the world to perfect itself. The Makor HaElyon, in its upper source. And because when you connect your ratzon olami, the world as a whole wants to Hashem will put in the ratzon, wants to do good for the world, wants the world to get better. Skip down to the next paragraph. Hatshuva ba'a mishi'ifat ha'metzi'ut kula lios yoser tova mizrachakas. Tshuva comes from the desire of creation as a whole to become better and more purified. And each individual person, let's get down to the next line, but tshuva pratit shel adam yachid kamachom v'shal tzibur sho'eves hi es kochom v'mekor chayim zeh. And when an individual person wants to do tshuva, you should tap into this global cosmic process of ascent and development. So just take a step back. To take a step back and see what Rav Kook is doing. So for Rav Kook, a major motivating factor of tshuva is not just looking at me, my own individual life, my own failings, and what I have and feel horrible about that, and to try to use that as a motivating factor to fix it. It's really looking more broadly on one level, and looking at the world as a whole, and looking at the process of development of the world as a whole, and that is going to be a motivating factor to tshuva. So one difference, one chiddush, is that it's not about me as an individual, it's about this whole process, and my integral role within this process, as we'll see maybe next year, that each person has an integral role, an individual role, a unique role within this process, but you have to look broadly in order to motivate yourself as an individual to do tshuva. And number two is that it's much more positive. It's much more simchadik. Because it's not focusing on all my flaws, all my faults. It's not focusing on how horrible of a person I am. Ma ra, like Rabbeinu Yonah said, as powerful and as necessary as that is, Rav Kook also thinks it's necessary. But Rav Kook is emphasizing the joy, the sublimity, the sublimeness, the simcha of tshuva, the beauty of tshuva. Because when a person does tshuva, they are retaking their natural place in the order of creation. They're coming home to a degree. It's the chait that makes a person step out of their natural world, makes a person step off of this constant process. And that, Rav Kook describes, is very, very painful when a person thinks about it. You might get hanah for a second, but when you look back at a series of chataim that you did, a person feels horrible about themselves. So at least this is what Rav Kook describes. Fuchs says the inner psychology of that is that a person's nature wants to be part of this cosmic process, and it's painful to be apart from it. And therefore, when a person does tshuva, they're returning home. They're returning to the state of reality that they should be in, taking their place among the rest of the cosmos. They feel more connected with their family. They feel more connected with their friends. They feel more connected with their community. They feel more connected with the nature around them. They feel more connected with the entirety of the history of Am Yisrael, the entirety of history of the human race. And that is a very joyful and simchatic feeling. So Rav Kook's motivation to do tshuva, this motivation to do tshuva, A, focuses more broadly. It focuses your vision on a broader perspective. Number two, it is a joyful motivation as opposed to a motivation that stems from thinking about how horrible I have acted and what and how can I remain in such and how can I remain in such a low state of failure. One more ramification of this idea, not a motivation, a ramification of this type of tshuva that Rav Kook is describing, is source number 8. Rav Kook says, "Kishim shetzrichim la'alot et amidos makshavos haroso sharshan." Just like a person needs to elevate midos and makshavos that are bad to their root, k'deila tachnon olamatkan, to fix them and to sweeten them. Kain shetzrichim la'alot et amidos makshavos haketanos. Person similarly needs to fix mitos and thoughts that are small, alpha pishin tovos, even though they're good, but they aren't on a high and shining level. You have to elevate them to their source, and to enlighten them from the light of greatness. So, what does Rav Kook mean over here? We understand that if somebody has mitos and makshavos rose, they have to do tshuva for them. Like the Rambam Hilchos Shuvah Targ Zayin is all about tshuva on mitos. So if somebody's constantly getting angry, that is a mita and makshava ra, and they have to do tshuva for it. But what is a mita and makshava ketana, which is inherently good, but is not yet gadol, not yet great? So if I understand correctly, Rav Kook means is like let's say somebody is in college or graduate school and they have a test coming up, and the test is an important test for their future career. So if you're a firm person, they daven before the test, and they should do well on the test. So that is, it's a good thing. It's tova. You're realizing that ultimately it's up to Hashem what I score on this test. But on the other hand, it might be katana. It might be very narrow. If you ask a person, why do you want to do well on the test? They'll say to get a good score, get a good grade in the class. What do you want to do? What do you want to get a good grade in the class? I want to leave this institution with a good GPA. Why do you want to leave with a good GPA? Because I want to get a good job. Why do you want to get a good job? Do you want to support my family? Why do you want to support your family? To be able to do X, Y, and Z. And ultimately, if this series of questions should always lead to the answer, because Hashem created the world in a one-way upward trajectory to the ultimate state of perfection, and everything about the world, every person has a responsibility. It's in their nature, but it's also their responsibility to help accelerate this process. And everything I do should be part of that process. So ultimately, yes, you should be davening to do well on the test, but ultimately you should be able to connect the dots in your mind from something that's katana, from something that is more narrow, something that is gedola, or shel gedula, to something that is broad, something that is cosmic, and that infuses much more importance in the things that you're doing, that is going to motivate you to always do things with that in mind, and it's going to ultimately change one's decisions if they have this idea of helping Hashem accelerate the process of ascent of the world, of ascent of civilization, ascent of humanity, ascent of Am Yisrael to the state of ultimate perfection, that is going to ultimately affect one's decisions and make real life changes in a person's lifestyle. So this idea of Rav Kook, that thinking more broadly can motivate a person to do tshuva, is also affects also impacts the content the content of one's tshuva. Even if there's a chait, there still could be a concept still could be a concept of tshuva. So just two ha'aros very quickly. Those people that are familiar with Novotanya, Igaros HaTshuva, Tshuva Tata, Tshuva Ilah. So there's a lot to say about that this type of tshuva, of a tshuva without a chait, and the Alter Rebbe's Tshuva Ilah, but we'll leave that for a different time. And also this concept of Hitalut Ha'olam, of the ascent of the world, I think every time I speak about it, I have to mention that Rav Kook died, he passed away in 1935. And this notion of progress, of ascent, was very, very popular in Rav Kook's lifetime. Rabbi Amital used to point out that he doesn't know what Rav Kook would have done had he lived through World War II and had he lived through the Holocaust. It's hard to be so optimistic, hard to be so into progress and ascent of all civilization and all of civilization, all societies, and morality and human society as a whole, not just in Am Yisrael, as Rav Kook here is describing, if the worst atrocity in human history occurred in the 20th century. So I will just mention that and leave that over here. So we describe tshuvat ha'olam, tshuva of the world, and tshuva of the yachid, how tshuva of the yachid fits in within that content process. But in between those two levels, Rav Kook ends off Rosh Hashanah with tshuva of the nation, tshuva of Am Yisrael. So let's look here at the last source. Rav Kook writes, "Tchiyas ha'uma, the revival of the nation of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, he yisod shel binyan ha'tshuva gadol." This is the foundation of the building of a great tshuva. Tshuvas Yisrael ha'elyona, u'tshuvas ha'olam kulo shetavu acharav. The tshuva of the upper tshuva of the world of Am Yisrael, the tshuva of the entire world that is going to come afterwards. So for a cook, Am Yisrael also is in a constant state of ascent. In Galus, it was hard to recognize, but it was happening in an inner fashion. But this bursting forth of Am Yisrael back to Eretz Yisrael, trying to rebuild the Jewish society there. For a cook wasn't ju didn't just impact now we can do mitzvahs to those Aretz, we do mitzvahs Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. For a cook, this indicated that Am Yisrael also was rising. Am Yisrael also was becoming more elevated in a revealed fashion. And this is part of the tshuva of Am Yisrael to retake its places as a nation among other nations, as a leader among other nations in Eretz Yisrael, and that is going to impact the way people daven, the way people learn, the way people connect to Hashem in a very positive, ascent-filled way. So that's why Rav Kook says there are these three concentric circles of tshuva. The broadest tshuva is tshuva of the world. So the broadest level is tshuva of the world. The most pratistic level is tshuva of the Yachid, and in between them is this tshuva of Am Yisrael. And when a person wants to motivate themselves to do tshuva, they should think about where they are in history, where they are in the history of Am Yisrael. God willing, towards the end of history, we've gone through the Galus, so we're back in Eretz Yisrael. The prophecies and nevuos are being fulfilled, at least the Chora. In human history, we should see how far we've come from the barbarous days of the Greeks and the Romans and pre them. And that should be, and seeing how far we've come as a human civilization, as a nation, should motivate us to be part of that process and help us do tshuva on our own individual levels. Thank you so much, and Hatzlach Rabbah. And just to conclude, that because this level of tshuva is so broad, maybe it's so amorphous, Mir Hashem, next week, maybe we'll focus on something more about the yachid on the individual level that Rav Kook discusses also as the theme in Inarot HaTshuva. Kol Tov.